Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
That guy is such a liar. Oh my gosh, Jim isn't even here. Jim's a little bit under the weather tonight, so he's going to be listening from home, but we wish him well. I'm Russ Avison, and I'm usually the quieter half of The Writer's Block on the Thursday evening, and welcome tonight, everyone. Wow, this COVID-19 thing has been, it has been a trial for sure. I hope everybody's staying safe, but I'm so ready to move on. I'm so bored. I'm so bored. This is the highlight of my entire week or month, maybe. So that lets you know how bad things are. You know, one thing is that we have to do, though, is we have to stay safe. And, you know, if you're a part of a society, it's important. It's your responsibility to do what's best for the society. A lot of the protests about people, you know, not wanting to wear masks, and we have constitutional rights, and you know, you do have constitutional rights, but you also have responsibility to the rest of your society because you're a part of it. And if you don't want to help out, you know, go live in the mountain. I think that's just fine. And one thing that's been really fun, though, is that a friend of mine, Janet, she gave Karen and I a couple of these Alexa, I guess they're I don't know, the talking bots, and they have these screens on them. And I have one in the kitchen, and they're always throwing new recipes at us. And I'll tell you what, Karen, who is not a cook at all, has become an amazing chef. And she has been cooking all these wonderful dishes. And I can't do anything except sit around and get fat. But it's been fun. Been enjoying it. Anyway, tonight, you know, if you enjoy books like When Calls the Heart by Jeanette O'Keefe or Promise Me Tomorrow by Laurie Wick, then you'll love the stories that are written by tonight's guest, Linda Tillis. Linda was born in Goody, Kentucky, which is coal mining country. Her mother moved her to Cleveland, Ohio, when she was just a small child. And unfortunately, Linda lost her mother to cancer when she was just 10 years old, and so she moved to Florida to live with her father and his new family. She read voraciously during her high school years. In fact, at lunch on Thursdays, she would make a couple of dollars writing book reports for other students. She's worked in the garment industry for 18 years. And then she changed careers in 1986. And I mean, she really changed careers. She went from fashion to forensics, spending 20 years as a crime scene investigator, and then another 7 years as a 911 call taker and dispatcher for the local sheriff's department. But after so many years of brutality, death, and general mayhem, her wonderful husband helped her realize it was becoming detrimental to her health. So she retired, what every upstanding person would do who respects themselves. She spent a year reacquainting herself with the real world, took up nature photography, and actually sold a couple of articles with photos to the Florida Wildlife Magazine. So then her husband said, "Now you should write a book." And so she did. Linda's books include A Heart Made for Love, A Man with a Pure Heart, sequel to A Heart Made for Love, and A Heart for All Time. Linda Tillis, welcome to the Writer's Block.
Well, hello, Russ. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad to do it. I've been looking forward to this conversation, mainly because I had a chance to talk to you the other night, and I love the accent, so I'm going to let you do most of the talking tonight, and I'm just going to sit here and enjoy it.
Okay.
So I had a chance to read the one book, A Heart Made for Love, and the first thing that took me by surprise when I started to read it was that it takes place in the Old West rather than modern day. And I was kind of surprised at that. But well, I'll tell you what, why don't we start out? Why don't you just give us a little thumbnail sketch of what the book is about?
Well, the book is about a young woman, a young girl at the time, who is the caregiver for her entire family. Her mother died in childbirth when May was 10 years old. And she has been taking care of her two younger brothers and her father ever since. And she is a very self-reliant girl. Her mother was a very religious woman, gave them a strong sense of faith in the family. And so when a horrific event occurs to May, she is assaulted by several men moving through the area. And she uses that faith to recover. And she spends some time thinking about what she wants to do. She decides that what she would really like to do is open up a shelter for women. Her father and her brothers were tremendous support for her, protected her mentally, physically, everything after the event. And she realized that there were women out there who did not have that family support, and she wanted to be able to give that to women. So she decided she needed to go to school, which moved her from the backwoods of Trenton, Florida, to Tallahassee, the state capital. And her story goes on from there.
Now, she's really an interesting person from the standpoint that, they have a saying, about so many beautiful women don't know they're beautiful. May is very strong and has so much impact on other people. And yet I don't think she knows that.
No, she does not, which makes her very lovable. A person who's really attractive and really smart and self-reliant, but they know it and seem to flaunt it, it's very difficult to get close to them and really care about them. That's not the case with May. She has no idea just how strong she is until, of course, she has to be.
And she is several times in the book, too.
Yes. And she handles herself very well.
She kind of scared the crap out of me. I wouldn't cross her in a dark alley. You have some other interesting characters in the book, too. But one that actually we didn't discuss, but was Doc. And Doc is, he almost seems like he's a member of the family. I mean, he's very close. He's very involved with the family. Where did the idea for this guy come from? Because I've never felt that doctors were like that.
You know, it's funny you should say that. I had a lady from my writer's group tell me that she would give anything to have a doctor like Doc in the book. He raised, he helped birth all of the children. In fact, he was attending when May's mother died and there was nothing he could do to save her. And so they're very close. But he's very intuitive and he's very kind-hearted. And the way he helped May get through this event is something that you probably, like you said, you don't know many doctors that way. I remember when I was a young girl, we had the measles. And the doctor came to our house. And we lived in Cleveland, Ohio at the time. I mean, Cleveland was a big city. Mm-hmm. But the doctor came to the house to see us. And you just don't hear that anymore. I mean, you know what it's like now. And so I guess from my early childhood years, when I was still in the West Virginia, Kentucky area, I was familiar with old doctors, you know, the kind that you, if you didn't have the money, you'd give him a chicken
or, yeah, or right.
or a side of bacon or something. But I think that's where I drew on the character for Doc.
Gotcha. That kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you saw the film with Michael J. Fox called Doc Hollywood. And
yes.
And he's in this little small town and some guy comes in and he needs to, Doc Hollywood, he needs him to do some work on, he's got an infected toe. So the doctor fixes it. And the next day the guy shows up and gives him a pig. And he yes. says, what's this? He goes, well, you fixed my toe. And he says, no, I don't want your pig. He says, yeah, you have to take my pig. Don't insult me. You take my pig. And through the rest of the movie, Michael J. Fox is walking down the street with this pig and people are going, ah, nice pig, Doc. I can just see that happening.
Exactly.
Now, first of all, you had quite an interesting background. Being a crime scene investigator for, 20 years, I think?
Yes.
What got you into that? I mean, coming out of the garment industry, and then getting involved with that. They seem worlds apart.
Well, I was in the garment industry in the years when it was very strong. I came right out of high school, and I mean, 2 weeks later, I was working at a sewing factory. And I worked on the sewing floor for 9 years, and then I was assistant to the production manager for 9 years. And it was a wonderful time. We were the second highest employer of women in our county, with the first highest being the school board. Wow. And it was just an amazing job. I loved every moment of it. But there came a time when the garment industry was all moving overseas, and they were having to downsize, and it was getting harder and harder for them to locate work for us to do, because most of our orders came out of New York, Miami, places like that.
Right.
And it was just becoming more difficult, because you could send your fabric, your buttons, thread, everything that it takes to make a garment over to Taiwan, somewhere like that.
Right.
And pay for all that shipping and bring, and of course you paid the actual worker absolutely nothing compared to what we were making here, and then ship all of that back, ship your finished garment back for about a third of what it costs to make a garment here. And it was just a matter of time, and I started looking around at other things to do because I knew it was coming. And my brother had already gone to work with the sheriff's office, so I couldn't go to work there. And I thought, well, I'll just go to work at the police department. So I put in an application, and they started me as a dispatcher. But after about 6 months, there was an opening in the forensic department. And I thought, I'll never be able to do this. But by that time, I was a divorced single mother with three children, and it was an upgrade in pay. And so I put in for the job, and I had put in for it, but had not been given it yet. And we had a suicide one night. I was on night shift, and I called the sergeant and said, is it okay if I go to this scene just to see if I can do this? And he said, absolutely, I'll send somebody to come and get you. So they sent a young corporal to come pick me up, take me out there. And when I got there, the sergeant met me outside, and he said, I want you to take this clipboard here, and you're going to go in with the crime scene investigator, and you're just going to help him and do whatever he tells you to do. Well, it was quite a shock.
I'll bet.
I had never seen anything like that before. Unfortunately, it was an elderly gentleman who had used a gun. And so I walked in, and he was lying there on the floor. And I would look at him and look away and look at him and look away. It took me a little while to acclimate myself. Mm-hmm. And it was so funny. The guy that I was working with said, okay, Linda, I need you to go over to that far corner and hold the end of the tape measure. I'm going to triangulate the position of the body. And it was either step over that dead body or step up on that bed and cross over the bed.
Mm-hmm.
I had a skirt on. Modesty went out the door. I hiked that skirt up, stepped right up on that bed, went over the corner and held that tape measure. There was no way I could step over the body. But after it was all over and I went home, I woke up the next morning and I thought, I didn't even get upset about that. And that was a poor soul. He was dead. And that's just not like me. And so I went in and talked with my sergeant about it. And he said, Linda, that's exactly what you need to be able to do. You need to be able to function at the scene, go home and go to sleep, because it's over and there's nothing else you can do. And that set the pace for the next 20 years.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Hey, listen, we're going to have to take a break here for a minute. Can you hang in there with us?
Sure.
Okay, we'll be back right after this.
Hey, Hey, J. Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything on that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is a .com and they have it all, from music to sports to self-help, but they even have talk. So why don't you sit back in your favorite chair, put your feet up, tune into LATalkRadio.com, and give us a listen. Guaranteed to be fun for you, and we're coming at you right now.
Hey, thanks, J. Michael. I don't know where that name came from. Pretty interesting one. Welcome back to the Writer's Block. If you're just joining us, I'm Russ Avison, and we're talking with Linda Tillis. She is author of Heart Made for Love and a few other novels, and we're just talking about her background and how she worked her way up to become an author. And you notice I say work your way up. So I hold writers in high regard, and that's probably because I can't do it. Jim is a fabulous writer, and I don't know, he's got 12 or 15 novels under his belt, and I have zero. So I really admire the work. Anyway, so Linda, you were you found out that you could do this crime scene investigating. What are some of the weirder crime scenes that you had to investigate?
Well, we did everything from minor car burglaries through larger burglaries, right on through homicides. So I've worked just about everything there is. One of the funniest things, we had a series of church burglaries where they were breaking in and stealing audio equipment. Mm-hmm. And so one of the local churches, they had gotten together and made up a little plan where every so often during the day, one of the deacons would stop by and check on the church. And so this particular day, this sweet elderly gentleman stopped by to check on his church. And sure enough, lo and behold, he caught a man inside. And he was very brave and just a little foolish. And so he confronted the man instead of calling us immediately. Right. And the guy jumped him and threw him to the floor. But thank goodness he was not hurt very bad. But then immediately he called us. It turned out that this was not related to the recent thing of burglaries that we'd had. And so I'm doing my photography of where he broke in the door and making my notes and everything. And I find this paper bag sitting on the altar. And I asked the little deacon, I said, "Is this yours?" And he said, "No, I think that guy dropped it." I picked the bag up and opened it up, and inside was the gentleman's discharge papers from the jail where he had just been released that morning.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was just, we were really laughing about that because now we knew exactly where to go and who to get. So
that's pretty good. Well, you know, I there's a television program on, I think it's on AMC. I don't know if that's the right station or not, but it's called PD Live. And for 3 hours, two nights a week, they send camera crews out with the police and they broadcast live, you know, traffic stops. It might be a murder investigation, whatever the police are out doing, they're following them. And in one of the episodes just recently, they were showing that they caught someone because they had taken the police on a long chase, probably about 20 minutes. The guy bailed out of the car and they couldn't find him. Well, they went back to check in the car and they found three prescription bottles of pills that were made out to the guy that they were chasing. Exactly. So it was really easy to find him. And one of the policemen who actually co-hosts the show, he said, "Well, you know what? We don't catch the smart ones."
And that is so true. But sometimes we do. It just takes a little longer.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. So anyway, I noticed that you said that you were taking photos when you were out doing the crime scene investigation. Was that a prelude to you getting involved with nature photography?
Exactly. I learned quite a bit about photography from the job with the police department. And then when I retired, my wonderful husband gave me a nice camera and said, "Now, go out and take pictures of living things."
Oh.
And so I did. We started taking long trips. I live in Florida, so you're
so you sweat a lot.
Well, yeah, I do. It is warm, but you have tremendous opportunity for nature photography. We have wonderful state parks and wildlife areas. So we started taking long drives and taking photographs, and everybody would see these and say, "Oh my goodness, these are beautiful. You really need to sell these." And I thought, who in the world would I sell these pictures of birds and deer and things to? And my husband come up one day and said, "Here, check with the Florida Wildlife magazine." And I said, "You're kidding." He said, "No, I'm not." So I looked them up and I saw what their criteria were for submission. Mm-hmm. And we had taken my mother on one of these trips. And so I wrote a story about that. She's an avid bird watcher. She absolutely mm-hmm. loves bird watching. And this particular trip, we were searching for a particular bird. It's called a roseate spoonbill. And sure. It's huge. It's a big bird, and it is absolutely gorgeous. It's got like a 4-foot wingspan, and it's a beautiful color, a kind wow. of a soft coral. And so anyway, we found the bird. And when my mom was in the back seat, and all at once she yelled, "Pink, pink." And she had seen the bird, but she was so excited she couldn't remember the name of it. So she just yelled, "Pink." So I wrote a nice little story about our trip and our birding adventure and turned it in with some photographs, and boom, they took it. And I was really surprised. So I wrote a couple more. And after that, that pretty much stretched out my whole year of recuperation, is what I like to call it. Mm-hmm. And I had then gone back to work for the Citrus County Sheriff's Office, and I was working night shift, and after 2 o'clock in the morning, when all the bars close, it's kind of dead because we've got a large elderly population. So it's reasonably quiet. Right. And so my husband said, "That's it. You need to write a book." I said, "I can't write a book," but I did. And so in the early morning hours, 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning, I would sit there and write while we were waiting for the phones to ring. And I was fortunate. Once I got started on the story, there were some really odd things that happened that really kept me motivated. I had it in my mind that this girl was going to eventually build a home for women who needed help. Mm-hmm. And while I was writing this book, my husband went online looking for a place to buy something called Mayhaw jelly.
Sure. It's a bear. What is that?
It's a berry that grows here in Florida and in southern Georgia, and it makes tremendous jelly. It's just delicious. He found a place, and it was up in Georgia, but lo and behold, it was being sold by a women's shelter group. They're run by a church, and We met them. We drove up to Georgia to meet with them because we were just so impressed with what they were doing with women who had alcohol problems or drug problems or who were abused and getting out of bad relationships. I dedicated the first book to them. They were just tremendous.
Wow. That's really something. It sounds to me like your husband's your biggest fan, and it also sounds like whatever he says you could do, you just say, "Yeah, I guess so. Okay."
He knows me a whole lot better than I know me. So when he tells me I can do something, I'm always very hesitant because I don't always trust his opinion. Mm. But he proves me wrong, so I can't argue.
Now, is this Heart Made for Love? Is this your first book?
Heart Made for Love is the first one, yes.
And it came out when?
It came out in, I believe it was 2016. Okay. Came out, they released it on my birth date, which I thought was just the greatest present I could ever have.
That is so nice. Yes. Okay, so in 2016, how long did it take you from the time you had the inspiration to write the book until you actually had it finished and was ready to produce it and give it to your editor?
I didn't have an editor or a publisher. Mm.
Okay. So talk about that a little bit too.
My husband bought me, I can't remember the name of the book, but it's a big wide book. It's a publishing thing, and it lists all of the publishers and what type of books they publish. And so I was going through there, and I gave submissions to probably three or four different publishing houses. And of course, there came the rejection letters, which is really sweet. but they would always say, it's a nice story, but it's just not what we're looking for.
So
one day my husband said, the Christian bookstore in town is, they've got some, he'd seen it in the paper or online or somewhere, and there were going to be three ladies there who wrote books, and they
Something's cutting out there, Linda.
And I spoke with the ladies, and of course I bought one of their books,
right.
And they told me to find a writer's group to join. And I did. I found a local writer's group and mm-hmm. joined it, and ended up being in that group for a few years. And through them, I learned what I needed to do to finish the book off, to get it to a publisher. And three of the ladies had already had books published through my publisher, now my publisher, which is the Wild Rose Press.
Mm-hmm.
So I submitted the book to them, and they took it.
Wow.
And I was thrilled.
That is something. Hey, I got to ask you to take a little break for a second, but do you have a dog?
No, I don't.
Have you had dogs before?
I've had a cat.
You had a cat? Oh, I love cats too. I have three cats, but I want you to think about this for a minute. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sounds like a perfect vacation spot, doesn't it? Well, it is. For your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you're going away for a one- or two-night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. And when your dog returns home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better? Check out their website at www.alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. Your dog will thank you. And thank you for putting up with that, Linda.
Oh, no, that was great.
So, all right. So let's see. We've been taking pictures. Your husband says, write a book. You just did it. You didn't know what to do, so you found a few resources to go follow up with, and boom, you've got a book, you've got it published. That must have been an amazing feeling to actually go through that whole process.
I am sure that the morning that I woke up and went and sat down to my computer and there was a contract from the Wild Rose Press, I am sure my neighbors heard my scream, and believe me, I live on almost 4 acres. We're in the country, so we're all separated, but I know they heard that scream.
Did the coyotes howl back at you?
No, I don't have coyotes. I have deer.
Ah, yeah, we have coyotes out here. I also live out in the country, and we got bears and bobcats and coyotes, lots of coyotes. We hear them at night. But at any rate, so you got the first book done. There's at least two more that I know about that came later.
Yes.
So how difficult was it to get started doing the second book?
It was not difficult at all, because there is kind of a surprise twist at the end of the first book.
Yes.
And I had someone tell me that they wish they had had a brother. One of the girls that I used to work with told me that she'd always wanted a brother. And she wished she'd had a brother that took care of her the way Samuel took care of May. And so I knew I had to write Samuel a story.
Oh, so okay.
That was not difficult. And there was just a little bit of paranormal in Samuel, and that's all I'll say about that.
Okay.
But it comes out in his story. And so when I once I got started, it was okay. I like to say that my books have a whole lot of love, a little bit of murder, and always a happy ending. So that gives you an idea that somewhere in there, you're going to come across a dead body for one reason or another. And that's just the way I write. So the second one was pretty easy. And my sister, who lives in Tennessee, said, well, now you need to write a book about Tennessee. So I started looking, and of course, I'm totally familiar with the mountainous area, and having been born in West Virginia, Kentucky, and I really wanted, it's easier for me to write the murders if I do it in a historical sense. If I wrote a contemporary book, I think it would be painful for me to write about the murders.
Too close.
So I set everything back in time. So, but I really wanted something for the third book that was different. Not that I didn't love the first two and enjoyed doing them, but I wanted something a little different. And it came to, and everybody, of course, said, well, you need to write one about a 911 dispatcher.
Right.
And I wanted to, so I did, but I took her back to 1890. She bought a piece of Indian jewelry in Asheville on a shopping trip, and she went home with her jewelry and put it on, and she went to sleep. And when she woke up, she found herself in 1890 on the top of a mountain where a man was about to be hung.
Wow. Well, if that doesn't grab some of the audience to go and have to figure out that story, that's really something.
I really enjoyed that one. It was different.
So how many novels have you written so far?
I've had 3 books published, and I'm writing on 3 more at the time.
Wow. Okay. Are they all similarly set in the past?
May and Samuel have a younger brother named Cyrus.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with the old movie called Random Hearts?
I am not.
It is a war story, and it's about this gentleman who, after the war, was put in a sanitarium because he had lost all memory. It turns out that he was a very wealthy man. It's set in England. He was like, I don't know if he was a lord or a duke or something like that, mm-hmm. but he was a very wealthy man. But one of the nurses at the sanitarium, the night that they declared the war was over and everybody was celebrating, she helped him leave the sanitarium, and she took him with her, and they fell in love. They got married, and they were very, very happy. And he was writing some stories, and he went to London to check with his publisher or something like that. And mm-hmm. was hit by a car, which immediately jogged his memory back. When he woke up, he was his old self. And so the younger brother, Cyrus, I'm using something like that. My sister, again, wanted me to write about a veterinarian because she is an animal lover. And so Cyrus, if you noticed in A Heart Made for Love, mm-hmm. he took care of all the animals.
Right.
He loves animals. So I've got him going to veterinarian school. But when World War I hits and they ship so many horses overseas because, you know, they used to fight on horseback and use the horses to pull wagons and all sorts of stuff. We shipped hundreds of thousands of horses overseas. And he knew that someone was going to have to take care of all those animals. So he signed up in the military. But when he got there, by the time, you know, the United States did not get into World War I until like the last year of the war. Mm-hmm. And so by the time we got there, they had already determined that this was not the way to fight a war. And they had moved to machinery and trench warfare, where you, obviously you couldn't have a horse in there. So he ended up driving an ambulance, and his story goes from there. He loses his memory. He gets hit by a shell and loses his memory and doesn't remember that beautiful young nurse that he fell in love with.
You have a very fascinating mind.
Well, okay. I like that word, fascinating.
No, I like it. I like where it goes. I wanted to ask you, I want to drop back a minute to this first book because...
Sure.
You and I spoke on the phone the other day for, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, and then we've been talking for about a half hour. I'm starting to feel that your protagonist, May, that there's a lot of you in her. Is that, would you say that's fair?
My husband would tell you yes.
What do you say?
Yes. Well, I'm a lot like May in that I don't particularly care for confrontation, mm-hmm. but if you put me in a corner, I will come out fighting.
Mm-hmm.
I will defend my family to the bitter end. So, you know, and I am a country girl and we take family pretty serious. So yeah, I'm a lot like May.
Okay. And then May also, she worked with clothing in the beginning.
Yes.
You worked in the garment industry.
She was a milliner. She made hats.
Right. Right. And then she was also interested in women's rights. And I get the feeling that actually comes out of what you think about.
No, not necessarily. I am not a women's rights activist. I am an individual's rights activist. Mm-hmm. I believe we all have, we were given the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Okay.
And that's exactly what we need to do with our lives.
We need to pursue life, liberty, happiness. And happiness. Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Well, it sounds like you're finding the happiness in the writing for sure.
It helps.
It is pretty evident in the books. Do you see yourself doing a different type of writing, or are you going to stick with this genre?
Actually, I'm trying to do a screenplay for the first book. But I'm finding it is a totally different thing because it's very short and concise. But when I write very descriptive, and I'm having difficulty changing over to script writing. And I understand that is an issue with a lot of authors, that they have trouble making that transition. But I'm working on it. We'll see what happens.
Interesting. You know, that was something that I thought about earlier today, is that I noticed you like to use a lot of color in your description. And when I say color, I mean you use color. You talk about the colors of things that they see. And it stood out to me when I read that.
That's from 18 years of working in the garment industry. I lived for color. In the garment industry, you're always working 6 months ahead. So in the wintertime, when it's cold outside, we're making summer clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So that it'll be in the stores when ladies need it.
Right.
And so I just lived for the seasonal change because I would get to see all the new colors. And I did a little millinery work myself in the photography. In the photography, I have a beautiful younger daughter and I love to take photos of her. And I wanted to do in fact, we did a photo shoot like she was Bonnie from Bonnie and Clyde.
Right.
And it was funny. We had to go out to my mother's house way out in the country because she was going to be holding a gun in these photos. And I did not want anybody calling the law. So so we went way out in the country to take these pictures. But I really enjoyed the setup of it. So I decided I wanted, she had a hat, but I didn't care too much for the hat. And I said, I want to make hats, Victorian style hats to use in the photography. Again, wow. My wonderful husband bought me a book and said, here, learn how to make hats if you can't find what you want. And so I did. I sold a few, and they're pretty involved, but I had fun doing it. And I made about a half a dozen or so that I used in the photography. And one of the hats was put on display on a website of a well-known milliner in Australia. She liked the way I had made that hat. So it turned out very well.
That's very nice. It kind of sounds to me now, I'm listening more and more, that your husband just likes to give you a lot of stuff to do. Maybe he's trying to get you out of his hair.
Yes, that keeps me busy, and then I leave him alone.
Elena, we have to take one more break. So you're okay to hang around? Okay, sure. We're going to be right back after this word.
You know, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. No, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals and needs. So Creative Edge, it's your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson, publicist, www.creative-edge.services.
All right, we are back. If you're just joining us, where the heck you been? This is the Writer's Block. I'm Russ Avison, and we're speaking with author Linda Tillis. Linda, what did you find were your biggest obstacles in trying to put together the first book? From beginning to end, what did you find that you had to fight the hardest for?
Actually, it was finding the right publisher. I had no problem writing the story. Once I got started, it actually just kind of poured out of me. But once I was finished with it, it was finding the correct publisher for that type of book.
So publishers, and again, I'm coming from the perspective of I've known nothing about this industry, but so different publishers kind of specialize in certain genres again, or?
Yes.
Yeah.
And my book, while it's considered a historical romance, also has an inspirational theme, and also has just a tiny bit of paranormal there at the end. So it covered a broad spectrum, and I was very fortunate to find the Wild Rose Press because they're run entirely by women, by the way. Mm-hmm. And
But you have no interest in women's rights or anything like that.
Well, it just turned out that that's the way it was.
I don't think so. I think there's more to this than you're telling us.
You think?
I do.
But anyway, they it fit their genre list, and so once I got it into the right hands, it was not an issue. They're very good. They're very helpful. They helped me plan the book cover. I use their editing services. They're just wonderful people to work for. And they recently, in the last 2 years, started doing audio. And there was an odd story that I wanted to tell you about the audio. Please. Of the first book. The book was already up on Amazon, had been up for a year or two when they decided to do the audio. And so what they do is they send it over to Amazon's audio group, and they put it before people who work for them. Well, they had sent me three samples of people reading the book. They mm-hmm. sent me two, and I did not like either one of them. I mean, they weren't bad. They just didn't resonate with me.
Sure.
And
then not what you were looking for.
Yeah, then I got
kind of like what you were told from the different publishers when you submitted your books. It's not quite
exactly
what we're looking for.
Exactly. When they sent me the third one,
mm-hmm.
I immediately liked the way he read. And I thought, this is odd, though. It's a man, but I would have thought that May should have had a woman do her part, but he did voices for everyone in the book. He mm-hmm. was awesome. So the little smidge that I sent for them to read, he did very well. So I accepted him. And within a day or two, I got an email from him. His name is TJ Allen, and we became great friends. It just so happened that he read the book, and when he did, he really wanted to do the audio because he's from Trenton, Florida, where the book originated.
Oh my gosh. Uh-huh.
And he had since moved out of state, but he still had family in the area. And he said the women in his family, he's a good Christian man, and he said the women in his family are so important to him, and he's so related with what May was trying to do to help other women that he just wanted to do the book. And I've had people who listened to the audio who loved it because of his voice, of everything that he did. So I was very pleased with that. We had two or three serendipity things going on with that first book between the House of Hope in Georgia and then TJ doing the audio. It was awesome.
You know, you're not the first writer to tell us about things like that just kind of fall together. When you write, this is a question that we ask every author that comes on the show. The show is called The Sure. Writer's Block. Have you ever had it?
Are you kidding me? Oh, yeah. In fact, that's why I'm working on three different books right now. I got so far on Cyrus's story and I came up against a hitch and I said, okay, I was in a panic. I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And my husband said, just stop writing and move on to something else. So mm-hmm. I did. And so I have three books going now.
You see, your husband couldn't stand to have you hanging around when you got the writer's block. Just go start another one.
There is probably a lot of truth in that.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, I got to tell you, this has been a real pleasure to have this chat with you. And I wasn't kidding about your accent. I do love to listen to you talk. It's very nice. If people would like to read your books, listen to the audio, maybe get a message to you on a website, how do they find out about you? Where are the places they can go?
Well, I have an author's page on Facebook, Linda Tillis Author on Facebook. I'm in the middle of building my own website right now, so it's not up. But all the books are on Amazon. They're available through Amazon, and including the audio. All three of them are in audio. TJ did the first two, and then a lovely lady from the Northwest Country did the third one for me. So they're all available on Amazon. And if somebody reads one and leaves me a review, good, bad, or indifferent, a review is always a good thing to have.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. And how are the reviews for you? Do you like the idea that people can actually put their thoughts on there, or?
Oh yes, I do. And I've had a couple of negative reviews where someone would say, "Well, this book is a little slow," or they didn't like the content. And I thought, well, I did a pretty good description on the back cover. So if you buy the book and you don't read the back cover, I'm sorry. You really should. But for the most part, I've had nothing but good reviews, and I'm very grateful for that.
Well, Linda, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the Writer's Block. It has been a delight. Linda's books are A Heart Made for Love, A Man with a Pure Heart, the sequel to A Heart Made for Love, and A Heart for All Time. All her books are available on Amazon, I'm sure, as well as some other fine booksellers. Linda, have a great night, and thank you again so much.
Russ, thank you so much for having me. I loved it.
You betcha. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that wraps it up for another edition of The Writer's Block. Jim should be back with us next week. I won't be here, but I think Jim will be joined by Bobby Jean Bell. So for everyone at The Writer's Block, this is Russ Avison saying we're out of here.